Well, good morning, everybody. So as Lindsay said, my name is Nathan. I am the transitional lead pastor here at The River. And welcome to the final week of a series that we are calling Faith Without a Script. And throughout this series, what we've been doing is we've been exploring what happens when God doesn't follow the script that we've written for our lives. And we often don't follow the script for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes we write our own scripts because we value control over our lives. Other times, because we want to have comfort. Sometimes it's just because we're afraid. Sometimes it's because we feel like God's script is going a little too slow. Other times, a little too fast. But what we see happen time and time again is a bit of the same story. That we write a script on how we think our lives should go. And then God rewrites the script. And we're faced with a choice. Do we cling to the script that we've planned? Or do we trust the new script God has for us? So before we get to today's story, just want to provide a little bit of context for you. We're stepping backwards in time to the beginning of Jesus' ministry. So this is before the disciples have been chosen. And at this point, Peter has already met Jesus. And in fact, we covered this story back in January. This is Luke 4, verse 38. That after leaving the synagogue that day, Jesus went to Simon, aka Peter's, home, where he found Peter's mother-in-law very sick with a high fever. And everyone begged Jesus to heal her. So standing beside her bed, he rebuked the fever and it left her. Which means Peter has already had an encounter with Jesus. He has watched Jesus heal someone. He's also heard Jesus teach. So he knows enough by this point to know this isn't just some ordinary guy. But knowing of Jesus and trusting Jesus with your life are not the same thing. And that brings us to today's story. This is Luke 5. That one day, Jesus is preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And great crowds are pressing in on him to listen to the word of God. And so as he backs up, he notices there's two empty boats sitting at the water's edge. For the fishermen, they'd left them and they're washing their nets. So stepping into one of those boats, Jesus asks Peter, its owner, to push out into the water. So he sat in the boat and he taught the crowds from there. Okay, we are already again seeing the magnitude of Jesus' popularity. That the more he teaches, the bigger the crowds grow. And they're pressing closer and closer because they want to hear every single word, which means Jesus is backing up and backing up and backing up. And eventually, he finds himself waist deep in water. So he's like, okay, what do I do? He looks around and he sees a couple of boats nearby. And wouldn't you know it, one of those boats happens to belong to Peter. The same Peter he's already met before. Now, you can imagine this from Peter's perspective. That's kind of the perspective we're going with today. Imagine yourself being Peter. You have just finished a long, grueling set of hours out on the lake. And you're cleaning your nets. You're ready to go home. Peter's worn out. And he's probably a little bit grumpy. Because as we'll find out later, Peter busted his butt all night long and did not catch a single thing. So he's not in a good mood right now. He's ready to go home. He wants to kick back. He wants to have that root beer. He wants to have a relaxing evening with his family. He wants to forget this day ever happened. Then all of a sudden, there's Jesus. And he's like, hey, Peter, can I borrow your boat? And I'm sure Peter's thinking, sure. I mean, you did heal my mother-in-law. I guess I owe you one. Yeah, I know. Some of you are like, I could have gone the other way with that. I'm not going to go like, actually, no, I'm just going to row out myself. Anyway. So they push out from the shore. And Jesus uses the boat as his floating stage while he teaches the crowd. Which, okay, so far, so good. Nothing particularly strange. But then Jesus finishes teaching. And as Peter starts to row back into the shore, Jesus turns to Peter and is like, actually, Can we go out there where it's deeper? Here's what I want you to let your nets down so we can catch some fish. And at first glance, it's like, all right, that's not a crazy request. But this is where we need to understand who Peter is. Because Peter's not like us. He's not just casually going out fishing occasionally as a hobby. Maybe we catch something, maybe we don't. That's not really the point. No, no, no. Fishing isn't something casual for Peter. Fishing is his life. Fishing is how he pays the bills. Fishing is how he feeds his family. Peter fishes like his father fished before him, like his brothers and his friends fish now. So Peter has tossed his net into the Sea of Galilee day after day, week after week, year after year, decade after decade, hundreds, probably thousands of times. His entire life revolves around fishing the Sea of Galilee. So I say all that to say, Peter knows his fishing. He knows the lake like the back of his hand. He knows how to fish. He knows where to fish in the sea. And he knows when the times are to fish. Like, fishing is his world. It's who he is. And that's what makes this request so fascinating, is throughout the series that we've just done, we've seen Peter challenge people's weaknesses. Jesus challenged people's weaknesses. He's challenged their fears. He's challenged their comforts. He's challenged their expectations. But this story is really cool because Jesus challenges something different. He doesn't challenge Peter's weaknesses. He pushes on his strengths. He tests the very area where Peter is the smartest, the strongest, and the most confident in himself. He challenges the one place where Peter knows more than anybody on the boat, and maybe even knows more than anybody out on the entire Sea of Galilee. He's pushing on Peter's expertise as a lifelong fisherman. And I think some of you know exactly what that's like, to be an expert in your field. We got some high-capacity people here. Like, you have spent years getting your degrees, developing your skills, gaining that experience. I've had the opportunity to talk to some of you, and it is very clear, you're not just good at what you do. You are some of the best in the world. And everybody knows it. And generally speaking, it's great to celebrate that. It is a blessing from God to have such skills and such knowledge and such giftings. But what happens when Jesus asks you to do something that's completely contradictory to everything your lifetime of expertise has taught you? What happens when Jesus challenges you not in the area where you're weakest and you're like, yeah, I do need to improve that, but in the area where you're the expert? Perhaps you say something like Peter did. Next verse, he says, Master, we worked hard all last night out there and we didn't catch a thing. Like, I can almost hear the tension in Peter's voice where he's kind of gritting his teeth and he's going, Jesus, okay, with all due respect, I know you know teaching. You're really good at it. And I know you know healing. But here's what I know. I know fishing. And I can tell you this. We were out there at that spot all night long. I cast my nets time after time after time. And there are not any fish in that place at this moment. And that's where so many of us get stuck. It's not because we're actually being rebellious or because we're unwilling to do something. It's because we're experts in our field, and we know what we're talking about. We've already gone out and cast those nets. We've crunched the numbers. We've gathered the data. We know how this script is going to play out in our church or in our lives. So honestly, why waste the time or effort? But then Peter adds, okay, if you say so, I'll go out. I'll let my nets down. And I love this sentence because it shows Peter is not convinced here. He knows he's the expert, but he's willing to give Jesus a shot. Now, I don't know the tone of how this came out, but from my perspective, like how I would probably be reacting is like, okay, fine, why not? I don't have anything better to do. Let's go out and do it. I'll humor you. I'll cast my nets one more time. I'll show you. You have no clue what you're talking about. Then we can all head back to shore. So Peter rows out into the deeper water. And I just picture him being like, okay, Jesus, here we go. And the second that the net hits the water, Peter nearly gets yanked out of the boat. Because the nets were so full of fish that they began to tear. So what does he do? A shout for help. He brings his partners from the other boat, and soon both boats are filled with fish and on the verge of sinking. So Peter casts his net, and they fill instantly. So Peter does what we all do at this point. We call for help. But the interesting part about this is, who does he call? He has Jesus in the boat with him, the guy who just produced this miracle. But he calls for James and John, which is a whole separate rabbit trail of how often we do the exact same thing. Like, we got a problem. Jesus is right there. We call for our friends. But that's a different sermon, different day. We'll get to it. For today, Peter, James, and John, they are pulling fish into the boat. And it is obvious we are seeing a miracle happen right in front of our eyes. But I think if we're not careful, we can miss the bigger picture here. Because we tend to think of miracles as the thing that happened. But for Jesus, the miracle was never about the thing. It's about the person whose life it's impacting. So we always say, oh yeah, the loaves and the fish, the calming of the storm, the walking on water. But the reason for those things isn't for Jesus to show off. It's to see lives changed. It's to help people grow closer to him. So in this case, the miracle isn't about the fish. It's about Peter. And when Peter realizes this isn't about the fish, it's about him, his response is immediate. He falls to his knees before Jesus, and he says, oh man, my Lord, Lord, please, please leave me. Please get away from me. You do not understand. I am such a sinful man. For he is awestruck by the number of fish that they had caught, as were James and John. Because for Peter, moments earlier, Jesus is pretty much just a good teacher and a pretty impressive healer. But now, Peter realizes he is standing in the presence of the Lord. And suddenly, all that expertise, all that bravado, that's what humility does to you. You see, humility isn't putting yourself down. It's not thinking less of yourself. It's seeing yourself accurately in relationship to the God of the universe. Peter's realizing that however much he knows about the lake and the fish, he is now standing before someone who created the lake and put the fish in it. And so completely overwhelmed, he looks at himself and he goes, I am a mess. Please, God, you have to get away from me. Please leave me. And Jesus says something really cool here. He says, no. He says, a very common thing we've been hearing a lot. Don't be afraid. Actually, here's what I want you to do. I don't want you to be away from me. I want you to come and follow me. And I'll show you how to fish for people. I love the fact Jesus doesn't shame Peter. He's like, yeah, you are kind of a mess. He doesn't condemn Peter. And he doesn't push him away. Instead, he invites him closer. But you also have to notice in this verse what Jesus is asking for. Because it is no small thing. It's like, oh, come follow me. Yeah, cool. Got it. Follow him. No, Jesus is asking Peter to make the biggest decision of his entire life. You see, Peter can't both follow Jesus and stay where he is. Because if Peter is spending his time fishing for people, he's not spending his time fishing for fish. And we have to remember, this isn't him, as I said, not him giving up a hobby. Fishing is not only his livelihood, it's his whole identity as a person. The boat represents everything Peter has ever known. The nets that he cast out represent his past and his present and really every future script he can imagine for himself. They're all fishermen. And Jesus is asking him to step out of that boat, drop those nets, and leave everything behind. Which leaves Peter with a life-altering question. Does he hold on to his nets and stay with the life he knows, a life he loves, a life he's probably pretty good at? Or does he drop his nets and follow Jesus into a future that he cannot possibly understand? Because if you'll notice in those verses, when Jesus says, come follow me, he doesn't sit down and tell Peter where it's going to go, why he needs to do it, or how it's going to happen. Peter doesn't know at this point, with this invitation, there will be storms calmed and waters walked on. He doesn't know there's going to be betrayals and arrests. He doesn't know there's going to be a cross for Jesus and one day a cross for him. As he sat on that boat pondering the invitation, I would wager, much like many of you, that he would never in a million years think, Peter, the fisherman, normal everyday guy, that one day, just a few years in the future, thousands of people would come to faith through his preaching. He doesn't know any of that. All he knows is at that moment, Jesus is calling him to leave everything he knows and follow him into a big, scary unknown. So if you're Peter, what do you do? Would you really be willing to make that big of a life-altering change with that little amount of information? Let's find out what Peter decides. As soon as they landed, Peter dropped his nets. He left everything, and he followed Jesus. As we've talked throughout this series, faith without a script is about releasing our fears of the unknown and trusting God's scripts even when we don't know what's going to come next. And for Peter, yeah, that meant leaving his nets, his boat, his fishing, the very things that defined him. And I wonder, what does that look like for us? Like, what part of your identity would be the hardest to surrender if Jesus asked for it? Because sometimes the very thing we build our identities around becomes the exact same thing Jesus asks, can you place that in my hand? I'm going to take that. And for Peter, he discovers that on the other side of releasing, he finds a life that is far bigger and far beautiful than anything that he ever could have written for himself. As we enter our time of reflection, I want to give you a prayer to sit with this week. So Peter left the thing that defined who he was, his entire life. And that thought reminded me of a conversation that I had with a friend who was in hospice. We were sitting there, we were talking openly about her funeral. She was close to passing. And she was just like, I want to I have something I want to say. And so we were talking about, what do you want out of your funeral? And she said, well, Nathan, these days I go to a lot of funerals. And when people stand up at funerals and they talk about someone who has passed away, you find out what their identity was really built around. Said, for a lot of people, it's work. People get up and talk about their careers, and their career was their life. For others, they talk about their hobbies. Man, he loved to repair cars. Oh, she loved to hunt. Oh, he loved to cook. And for a few, it's just like, look at all the things that they accomplished. And she kind of went on and on and was telling a lot of personal stories about that. And she got to the end of it and she said, when I think about my funeral, when I die, I hope the main thing people remember about me and say about me is, she loved and followed God no matter what. And I can tell you, people did. But that conversation, it's really stuck with me. It makes me remember where my priorities lie. So really what I'd ask you to pray about is this. Maybe you pray about it, maybe you write notes, maybe you put a reminder on your phone, you think about it. What would the people who know you the best say your life is built around? If people are giving your eulogy, what are they talking about? What are those things that they would focus on as the thing that defines you? Career, accomplishments, family, reputation, hobbies. How long would it be before they said, he really loved God? How long would it be before they said, you know, she followed God no matter what? Would they mention God at all? If the answer is yes, spend some time thanking God for that. And if the answer is oh, probably not, process through that with God. Because at the end of the day, faith without a script is not just following Jesus when he changes our plans. It's about trusting his plan enough to let it shape our entire lives and who we become. So I'm going to have you take the next few minutes and just really sit with that question. Then I'll come up and I'll close us in prayer.